Okay, it's module two, and we're going to be talking about advocacy, one of my very favorite topics to talk about. So if you know me and you've been following me for a while, you know that I'm a big OT advocate. So now we're going to be talking about advocacy and how it relates to vision for our kids. Are you ready to learn all about advocacy? Let's go. Before we get started, I want to remind you, if you're not already a member of my advocacy Facebook group, USA School-Based OTs Looking for Change, please, please, please join us. We need to have a place where we can network with each other, ask questions, share what's going on from one state to another in order to really advocate to our full capability. There are also separate state groups. So once you join the USA school-based group, you can then look and see if there's a group for your state. We have a lot of subgroups right now. We have Florida, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, all different ones. So please check that out and join us because people equals power. These are the results of a nationwide study that happened in 2023. What I really want you to pay attention to is the top four barriers to OT success in the school system. 41% of the respondents to this survey reported that there was a lack of understanding of the scope of practice in school-based OT. I think this is something that we can all really relate to. I know from administrator to administrator, I have different experiences with what their past experience is in occupational therapy or with occupational therapy and what they know that we can do. Very often OTs on social media are complaining that people think we're the handwriting teacher or people think we only do sensory, but that's simply not true. And it's up to us to really advocate and show the general school community that vision is a part of our scope of practice. If you look under conclusions and impact, it says OTs need increased consistency in our role in school-based practice across New York and across the United States. Education is needed for the school administrators and staff on OT scope of practice. So considering this, this means you can have everyday conversations with people like, oh, I wonder, it might be his vision. Let me take a look. And that right there opens up a teacher's eyes to say, oh, I didn't know OTs did that. Or it could be something even bigger, like presenting to your school and doing a continuing education webinar for them and just talking about the different things that OT can do, or just talking about how vision can impact our students. There are so many different ways to advocate that are pretty easy, but it is just so important. So I'm going back to this quote that Mitchell Shiman wrote. So this is one of my favorite quotes, and I'll be referring to it more than once, by Mitchell Shiman. He's an optometrist who specializes in what OTs can do in terms of vision because he's actually married to an OT. Pretty cool. Here's his quote. To be maximally effective in their therapy, occupational therapists should understand the complexity and importance of vision and how visual deficits can interfere with occupation. So this is about OTs understanding it, but once we understand it, it's up to us to advocate to share that with the rest of the school community. Makes sense, right? So I'm going to be talking a little bit about the history of occupational therapy in the schools. When IDEA came out, occupational therapists were drawn to working in the school setting to help students with disabilities and to help them increase their independence and their functional skills. But in 2012 or 13, I think it is, ESSA came out, and this is the Every Student Succeeds Act. And that federal mandate said that specialized instructional support personnel, that's us, social workers, psychologists, even librarians are, it's basically like the extra people, not the teachers, but the other support staff. They are supposed to be a pivotal piece of the instruction in schools. It's basically saying that occupational therapists and the other people, but of course we're talking about OT, are just as important and that we should have a pivotal role in designing the curriculum and helping all students. So we went from only seeing students with an IEP to federally being permitted and encouraged to see all the children and to help on a general level of the whole school community, not just those kids with IEPs. So logistically, when you look at the research, there are a lot of OTs who are still only seeing kids with IEPs. And we're always going to be seeing the kids with IEPs, but we're really trying to branch out into seeing more than just those kids. That is best practice. We should be helping all the children in the school community. And then when we talk about ESSA and the whole school community, we can't help but talk about multi-tiered system of supports. So if you're not familiar with MTSS or multi-tiered systems of support, it's a mouthful, there's different tiers. So in tier one, if you picture a pyramid, in tier one, MTSS, we are basically helping everybody, or it's really 80% of the school community. And ways that we can do this when it comes to vision are whole class and school-wide supports that benefit everyone. So when it comes to vision, we can be educating teachers about classroom lighting and recommendations. We can teach teachers about optimal seating. We can push into the classrooms and help with these things. We can offer screen time guidelines and other environmental modifications that might reduce glare. Simple things like that are something that are very often overlooked, and us as OTs, we can kind of educate the school community about these things. In terms of visual efficiency and how well the vision system works, we can advocate for whole class vision scanning activities, eye movement exercises during transitions, visual attention warm-up routines, and visual stimming and visual stamina building, and just educating the teachers about this. We're talking a lot in this course about being vision aware. We also want to advocate for other people to be vision aware, because that only helps our kids in terms of visual perception. And this is something that we are generally more comfortable and more used to doing. We can help with teaching teachers and offering continuing ed about what visual processing is, how it impacts kids' learning, talking about spatial activities, spatial awareness activities, and figure ground discrimination tasks. So we can provide the teachers with these kinds of things, or we can educate them about how these things help. Either way, it's still advocating and being part of tier one MTSS. Now, when it comes to tier two, that's going up in the pyramid. We're working with a smaller group of students, and this is kind of teasing out which students might be struggling. It doesn't mean they're necessarily getting individualized help or that they're being evaluated for special education, but they could use some extra help. So in your school setting, you're probably familiar with students who get pulled out for reading or math help. Often this is a tier two strategy. And how it happened is the students were screened, and then these students came up as possibly at risk for reading or math difficulties. So in terms of vision, this would be a place where we could play an integral part, depending on what your administration will allow or how open they are to things. But we can do vision screenings. We can push into the classrooms and do small groups, specialized seating assignments. We can be organizing visual rest break schedules. Our kids are on the computers so much now, and it's just, there's no end to it. All of the curriculum is on the screens, especially in the older grades. So it's just something to really be aware of. And then also things like enlarging the font or educating the teachers about different fonts and which ones are easier to read or which ones may be easier on our kids' eyes. In visual efficiency, we can be doing small group vision activities. We can be pulling students out who may be struggling with reading and looking at their vision skills, their visual efficiency, their visual processing. This is similar, if you've heard me talk about when I did the OMG, this is kind of what that was. It was an MTSS tier two small group instruction, and it was totally awesome. Visual perception, we can be, again, doing visual motor integration practice. We can be sharing information with the teachers about which students may benefit from things like that. Talking about position in space and skill building. Tier two would be working with students who are showing some signs of struggles or difficulties. And then our next tier is tier three, intensive support. So this would be most likely one-to-one, pulling out students. It doesn't mean they're classified and you're not necessarily pulling them out for occupational therapy, but they may be a general education student. They could be a special education student as well, but you'd be seeing them through the tiered supports. This is something that we would really need administrator buy-in for. And if you have an open-minded administrator who would be into something like this, that would be amazing. So in my OMG, I had 8 students and we did small groups. So it was 4 students on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then 4 students Tuesday, Thursday. And then we switched it up. After we started the group, and I also designed it so that we had 4 stations. Okay, so one child was at each station. After we started this pilot program, we had one more student that we thought would really benefit from it, but there wasn't room for him because there was only 4 stations and 4 students. So what happened is the person that I trained to run my OMG ended up pulling that one student one-to-one and doing the OMG groups with him, but on a one-to-one basis. So this would be an example of a tier three service because it's so individualized. I hope that makes sense. So part of advocating about vision is educating the educators. Again, I'm going to talk to you about the functional difficulty observation checklist. That's a mouthful as well. But this checklist is really eye-opening in terms of educating teachers about the different things that they may be seeing in the classroom and how this can impact our students' learning, but also how these areas of difficulty that they're noticing might actually be related to vision. Sometimes students who are behavioral, they may be avoiding, they may be seeming very inattentive. It actually could be that they're visually fatigued. So handing out a checklist like this to teachers when they have concerns about a kid is a great way to advocate and educate the educators. So let's talk about vision being within OT's scope of practice. If you've been following me for a while, you know that I've been pushing this and trying to educate about this for a really long time. There are some other OTs who are doing amazing work in regards to that as well. But I want you to have the resources so that you can back up your claims that vision is within our scope of practice, because it is. So under IDEA, a visual impairment is one of the 12 classifications that a student can have as a special education student, but a visual impairment is any impairment in vision that adversely affects a child's educational performance. So basically, under IDEA, any disability that a student has needs to adversely affect their educational performance. In the past, there was some confusion, and I'm going to go a little bit more into that, but because visually impaired, we used to always think of students who had low vision or who may be blind. That's not necessarily what is meant by IDEA. A visual impairment can include ocular pathology, brain injury, and ocular motor issues. There's a resource from the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services that talks about that, and I'm going to show it to you in a minute. In our Best Practices Occupational Therapy in Schools textbook, there's a chapter on vision. Therefore, it's in our scope of practice. And then there's actually an entire textbook written by Mitchell Scheinman, the optometrist I just quoted before. And his book is called Understanding and Managing Vision Deficits, A Guide for Occupational Therapists. So these two resources here are amazing and wonderful, and they're great for you to back up your claim that vision's within our scope. In the occupational therapy practice framework, vision is included in client factors related to sensory functions with a focus on vision as outlined in the OTPF4. That's the 2020 version. Vision is a critical sensory function that we as occupational therapy practitioners address in our practice. It plays a significant role on how individuals interact with their environment. And that's kind of crazy because it's very often overlooked, which is very silly because everything we're expecting our kids to do, not everything, but so much of what we're expecting our kids to do needs to go through their vision system. So understanding the impact of vision on daily life is really essential for us to be effective. Our framework specifically includes vision under sensory functions. And this inclusion underscores its importance and validates our efforts in addressing vision impairments comprehensively. So remember, our work in this area is not just about improving sight, but enhancing participation. We want our kids participating in learning, socializing, life skills, being independent, everything. It all really matters, and vision plays such an important part of it. This sets the stage for the resources and supporting documents we're going to explore in a minute. AOTA suggests that we do an occupational profile before we evaluate a student. And the occupational profile is long. It has a lot of questions to try to figure out what is helping the student to learn and participate and what is inhibiting them from learning and participating in the classroom. And specifically, under client factors in the OT profile, eyes and ears are included. So there we go again, vision included within our scope of practice. Included in your resources are a couple of documents from the United States Department of Education, from the Office of Special Education and Rehab Services specifically. So there was some confusion in the past, like I said, about the low vision thing. And under IDEA, a student who's visually impaired must have the services they need in order to progress in the general education setting. But a lawyer called Michelle Kotler reached out to the United States Department of Education because she was noticing that some students were being denied services for vision problems because they weren't necessarily considered visually impaired by the state's criteria. So the federal criteria was very broad, but then states were individually kind of interpreting IDEA and using that to not give kids services. So Michelle Kotler was a special education teacher who became an education attorney and an advocate for special needs children, which is so cool. She contacted the federal education officials in 2014 about this problem. So some states were excluding children with convergence insufficiency and other vision conditions from special education services, even though these conditions were significantly impacting their ability to read and to learn. The federal response to her letter is included in your resource packet, and it's pretty cool. And it makes it very clear that this is not okay. So in response to that, then the Federal Department of Education sent out a memo to all the state directors, basically making them aware of this and telling them that the definition of visual impairment, including blindness, don't contain a modifier, meaning it's any impairment in vision. It doesn't have to mean low vision. It doesn't have to mean blind. It can be anything that has to do with the student's vision. And it specifically says, may not exclude a child with convergence insufficiency or other visual impairment from meeting the IDEA's definition of visual impairment, including blindness. So basically, the condition that they have, even with correction, if it's impacting their education, the state needs to give them services and assist them. The memorandum goes on to include the fact that when determining a child's vision status, the LEA, that means the school district, their evaluation must be thorough and rigorous. And it has to include a functional vision assessment. So this doesn't necessarily mean that you, the OT, are doing the vision assessment. If there is a student that is really struggling in the school setting, the district may call in a TVI to do this functional vision assessment. Regardless, someone needs to do it. And if the district doesn't do it, they are not meeting regulations. They're not meeting federal regulations of IDEA. And they're doing the student a disservice, but it's also illegal. So if it came down to the fact that a parent were to file a lawsuit against a district because their child wasn't properly evaluated, this could be something where you might be questioned. So if you're not including vision in your OT evaluation, they may say to you, why didn't you look at it? Why did you choose to skip that over if this student is struggling to learn, to read, to write, and to participate in school? You need to legally do a thorough and rigorous eval. So keep that in mind. It goes down also to professional accountability, right? It goes back to your license. First of all, none of us want to be called to the stand and have to testify and justify our clinical thinking, but we may have to. So it's important. When you're doing your eval, you want to be able to explain why you did or didn't assess specific areas, and you have to be able to defend your clinical reasoning with current evidence. So current evidence also shows different treatment techniques that you can use to assist students, not only with visual impairments, but with whole body, integrating vision system with balance and integrating proprioception with vision. You can be called to justify every single aspect of your evaluation in an IEP meeting, in a due process hearing, or even in front of professional licensing boards. So an incomplete or inadequate assessment puts your license at risk, and it also denies children appropriate services. So make sure that you can answer these questions when you are completing your documentation and your evals. I am so absolutely proud of this handout that I made. It's a fact sheet that provides the different resources that proves that vision is within the scope of practice for OTPs. So this is an amazing handout to show your administrators. If you ever get pushback about including something in your eval, this is your sheet. I hope that you love it. I'm going to see if I can get AOTA to share it because it's really good, if I don't say so myself. I also have this sheet. This sheet will also help you to advocate and educate about our scope of practice. So I think this is really telling. It talks about what we can do. screening and evaluating, administering standardized tests in terms of vision, developing goals. Of course, our goals are going to be academically based. They're not going to be just about vision. It's going to be about something functional, but that goes without saying. We can also develop intervention plans. We can monitor progress, provide direct intervention, and document our service. These are all typical things that we would do, whether it's for fine motor skills, gross motor skills, visual perceptual skills, or vision. The types of things that we can do are eye movement disorders, visual perceptual skill deficits, visual motor integration challenges, and visual attention and scanning issues. We do talk in this course about binocular vision and about accommodation difficulties. We do suggest that you consult with the student's optometrist in regards to these skill sets. So in our assessment model, we'll be teaching you how to assess accommodation and also how to assess binocular vision issues. However, Mitchell, our guy, Mitchell Scheinman, in his Visual Deficits, A Guide for OT book, he says that OTs should be consulting with optometrists when it comes to binocular vision problems and accommodation difficulties. So this is where the interrelationship model comes into play. And we talk more about that in module one, but having a connection with a local optometrist or this student's optometrist, even better, is going to be very helpful in this way. We should not, OTs should not be attempting to manage suppression, managing strabismus in any way, or recommending patching. We don't do that. The references below on this sheet are also really helpful if you want to check them out. So I just want you to remember, you don't have to be the vision expert, but you do have to be vision aware. You do want to include vision in your occupational therapy evaluations. More importantly than visual processing, which is something everybody thinks of us as the visual perception experts, but we have to look at vision first. Otherwise, we're really missing out on what's actually going on with this child. Also keep in mind, you may be the only person who's looking at this child's vision.